Once when my granddaughter was about 3, she literally bolted up from a deep sleep, sat up, and with eyes wide open said, "I waked up." Since she was 3, we didn't have a full-on discussion about what she meant, but in that moment, I definitely believed her. Steve Taylor, author and lead lecturer of spiritual psychology at Leeds Beckett University, has been able to have many conversations with folks whose lives have been woken up, and trauma was their way in. His book is Extraordinary Awakenings. I'm Robin with Tributaries. Stephen, the subtitle to your book, Extraordinary Awakenings, is When Trauma Leads to Transformation. Obviously, every experience transforms us on some level, but if you share what you call TTT, we'll be able to get right into it.
Well, in psychology, there's a concept called post-traumatic growth, which expresses when we go through challenges and crises, they often have a long-term positive effect. So a challenge or a crisis in the long run can make you feel more appreciative of your life. It can enhance your relationships. It can bring a new spiritual or religious meaning into your life. But what I call TTT is more dramatic than that. So I found in my research that sometimes when people go through very intense suffering, for example, a long period of addiction, long period of depression, or a bereavement, or a diagnosis of cancer, sometimes in those situations, people undergo a sudden shift of identity. It's almost as if the normal ego dies away and a new self arises inside them. So they feel almost as if they're a different person in the same body.
So with this, how did categorizing the various types of trauma you just mentioned, some of them, how did that offer you insights into transformation itself?
There are some types of trauma which tend to be more intense. For example, I found that there's quite a strong link between spiritual awakening and incarceration. So it's not uncommon for prisoners to undergo spiritual awakening. And the same with soldiers, paradoxically. I found quite a few cases of soldiers who underwent spiritual awakening on the battlefield. So when trauma is very intense, that brings a lot of potential for transformation. The intensity of the trauma is probably more important than the type of trauma. TTT occurs across a wide spectrum of different situations. But I think amongst the most normal experiences that human beings undergo, bereavement is probably the most powerful transformational experience.
Would you share two examples of transformational trauma, one gradual and one instantaneous, and share how their lives perhaps compared and contrasted in the aftermath?
Yeah. Well, I mentioned warfare, so I'll give you an example of a British soldier. This is a guy called David, who's about 50 years old now. And when he was younger, he was in the first Gulf War and the second Gulf War in Iraq. After a battle, he would have to go around the battlefield looking for dead bodies or looking for injured people. So he regularly saw people killed, his friends were killed, and these encounters with death, they changed something inside him. He realized how fragile life is and how temporary life is. So it made him aware of the preciousness of life, but it also made him aware of something inside him which he felt couldn't be killed. He felt that there was some kind of essence inside him which wouldn't die, which couldn't die. So he had a number of mystical experiences which made him aware of something spiritual inside him. It was a gradual process over 20 years as a soldier. Eventually, he had an experience. It was a kind of the final experience which led to transformation. And that was when he had to go around a battlefield after a battle, and he found an Iraqi soldier who was dying on the battlefield. And he felt a kinship with this soldier, even though they were supposed to be enemies. And he held him as he was dying and felt this kind of this exchange of empathy and compassion between them. And after that, his back suddenly went. He had this terrible back injury. Somehow, psychosomatically, he must have created this injury. So he left the army straight away and was hospitalized. And eventually, he was invalided out of the army. And after that, he was a different person. He knew that there was something inside him which was spiritual and which was immortal. And it was a 20-year process, probably, which he underwent. But as you say, at other times, this process can occur very dramatically. In fact, mostly it occurs in quite a dramatic way. And one example of that is a woman called Eve, a Scottish woman, who was an alcoholic. She was a severe alcoholic for 20 or more years. And like a lot of alcoholics, slowly, you know, she lost everything. She lost contact with her family. She couldn't hold down a job. She eventually lost her possessions. She ended up homeless, living on the streets and just shoplifting for money to buy alcohol and just stealing alcohol from shops. And eventually she was so broken down, her situation was so hopeless that she decided to attempt suicide. She tried to kill herself by walking in front of a coach. After that moment of attempting suicide, something changed inside her. And she went back to her parents' house and her mother said, "I suppose I'll have to give you a drink because you're an alcoholic." And she said, "Yes." But when her mother gave her the drink, she couldn't drink it. She kept picking it up and putting it down again. She couldn't somehow drink it. And the doctor gave her some medication to deal with withdrawal symptoms. And when she recovered consciousness, she felt like she was a different person. She looked in the mirror and didn't recognize herself. And she knew that the craving for alcohol had suddenly disappeared in a very mysterious and a miraculous way. And ever since then, she's been a different person. She's had this sense of connection, this sense of well-being, this feeling of wanting to help other people. And all of the trauma and all of the turbulence that used to be inside her has just disappeared.
Yes, and it's pretty amazing that not only time shifts, you bring up in your book about people that have these experiences, their physicality can change and so much can change on so many levels.
That's true. I mean, it is literally as if they become different people. And that's why the addiction fades away, because the person that carried the addiction is no longer there. In some cases, illnesses can disappear as well, probably because a lot of illnesses are psychosomatic. So once a person changes identity, the illness disappears as well. And it's very common for people to change jobs. And unfortunately, one of the negative effects is that people often lead to divorce. For the partners, it's as if they are married to a different person. So, you know, it's not uncommon for relationships to break down. It's not as if they arrive at some kind of an end point of enlightenment where all their problems are solved and they live in a constant state of bliss. It's almost as if they transfer to a different road, a road which is higher up the mountain. So everything is kind of elevated and life is more intense and life is much more fulfilling. But they're still on a journey, you know, and they still encounter difficulties, but they're much more able to deal with the difficulties.
Absolutely. And that, I think, is one of the misgivings about what people think about ultimate transformation, because we are living in a physical world. You will have the problems, but they will not be so much in the reaction mode from them, which is more than half the battle, right?
Yeah. In some spiritual traditions, there's this idea that the world is an illusion and the body is an illusion. But I think that's terribly wrong. I think that when you undergo spiritual awakening, the body and the world become more real. They become infused with spirit. They become more sacred and fulfilling experience. You find activities like swimming or walking or running really fulfilling because they connect you with nature. You're still in the world, but the world becomes a more sacred and spiritual place.
Yes, and I want to move back just for a moment to what you were saying about post-traumatic growth. Now, knowing the little bit that I do of Russell Williams' work, who I know is a mentor of yours, which I was so happy to see, and you even helped him write his book, I imagine that it might be something that you perhaps gleaned from him about post-traumatic growth and how the story doesn't matter.
Yeah, well, he certainly went through a lot of post-traumatic growth. He went through a lot of trauma when he was a young man. He was in the Second World War. He was actually at Dunkirk, so that was a very traumatic experience. And after the war, he felt completely broken down emotionally and physically. And he wandered around for a few years as a tramp. And eventually, he ended up working for a traveling circus, looking after the horses. And caring for the horses became a transformational experience for him. He felt this oneness with the horses. It became a life of service and a life of mindfulness. So after 3 years, he underwent a sudden shift. One morning, he woke up and realized that he was inside the horses and he was inside everything. And all of his inner pain and turmoil just seemed to dissipate and was replaced by a fundamental sense of well-being. So yeah, he's a great example of post-traumatic growth. And sorry, I forgot the second part of the question.
Oh, well, the second part of the question is about the story not mattering. You know, many people get caught up in their story, and you don't have to rehash your story or relive it in order to transform out of it. I think that is such a key piece for people being able to move on these days.
That's true. The story is based on the past. And once you undergo a spiritual awakening, the past ceases to exist because you become present-centered and you realize that the past is just memory. You know, it's memory and maybe some recordings of events or some photographs of events. But the past literally does not exist. It is nowhere. We are only here in the present. It's the same, even if your story is positive, a lot of people derive meaning from a positive story. You know, but they're successful people. They've had a lot of achievements in their past. And it gives them a sense of, sense of well-being just to recall their past achievements and remember how successful they are. But it's just meaningless. You know, it has no relevance to the present moment. And the more you live in terms of your story, whether it's positive or negative, the less able you are to live in the present.
Yes.
And it's only really living in the present which brings fulfillment.
Right. And thank you so much for leading me right into what was my next question here.
Good.
I like that you got into four basic areas of wakefulness and the self-esteem of wakefulness.
Yeah. Well, there are four aspects of wakefulness, according to my research. All of the four aspects work together. You know, they're never separate. They're just different areas which develop in parallel. So one is perceptual. That means that the world around you becomes more real and more beautiful and vivid, and you become more curious to your experiences and more open to experiences. And the second is the subjective aspect. So that means that your own being, there are changes in your own being. Your mind becomes a bit quieter. You become aware of depths of your own being, which you never sensed before. And you feel a sense of connection to other people. You feel that you're no longer a separate entity living inside your own mental space. And that's related to the next aspect, which is intersubjective, which is about your relationship with other people and other living beings. So you feel a sense of empathy and compassion to other living beings, and you behave altruistically rather than selfishly. And finally, there's a conceptual aspect to it, which is that your vision of the world becomes more global. You're no longer in an ego-based mode of looking after yourself and being concerned with your own problems. If you're concerned with anything, it's about the human race's issues or other people's issues, because you have a much wider, more global outlook. And you no longer have a sense of group identity. I think that's probably what you're referring to as self-esteem or self-sufficiency, because you feel stable and contented within yourself. So you don't need to search for meaning by being part of a group or impressing other people, being accepted by other people. You feel this kind of stable sense of security, which means that you live more authentically and more autonomously.
Yes, and that, of course, is basically our identity in all aspects. And in your book, you talk about new psychological structures. Is there a place where you offer insight into these new psychological structures so someone that's not being drawn into a transformation through either an instantaneous event or a gradual traumatic life might be able to zero in on?
Yeah, well, I think there's a lot we can learn from people who undergo spiritual awakening in the midst of suffering. Unfortunately, we don't have to go through suffering to spiritually awaken. That'd be a great shame if that was true, but we can cultivate spiritual awakening too through following certain practices, through following certain paths. And one of the things I suggest in the book is that we can learn from the shifters, the people who undergo this transformation. And one thing we can learn is to face challenges that occur in our lives in a mode of acceptance. For example, if you are diagnosed with an illness, or if you suffer a bereavement, it's really important to acknowledge and accept the reality of your predicament, and in a way to surrender to the reality of your predicament, and also to explore the experiences that the predicament gives rise to within yourself. So you need to go inside and be prepared to explore your own being in a mode of acceptance. And if you do that, you can harness the transformational power of these experiences. You are more likely to undergo growth or transformation. And in a more general way, I think the important message from these experiences is to not be psychologically attached to external things, because I think the main reason why these experiences occur is because people let go of psychological attachments. So by psychological attachments, I mean things like ambitions, beliefs, a sense of status or success, a feeling of having accumulated a lot of achievements in your life, and so on. So we derive our sense of well-being and identity from these external things, but often they are taken away. For example, if you are diagnosed with a serious illness, you have to let go of these attachments. If you go through a bereavement, it also means letting go of these things. And if you are an addict, then you slowly let go of all these things in the process of losing everything. So that's all about psychological, letting go of psychological attachments. So we can practice that in our own lives too. We can try to consciously live in a detached way without being too dependent on external things.
Yeah, now that brings me to a brief quote from toward the end of your book. Can we wake up in time, basically, is a question you ask. And to a large extent, you say the answer is in our own hands. And I want to say, is it? I mean, does that large extent include ultimately, because so many transformations, especially as you recount them in your book, happen in spite of themselves or in spite of ourselves. And so, you know, it's kind of like not doing your homework till the last minute because you're not literally forced to. And so it's great to play around in spirituality, but for real transformation, is it few and far in between from people that just say, okay, I want to be a spiritual person, as opposed to somebody who's knocked on the side of the head and then they come out another person? What's your take on all of that?
Yeah, that's a good point. I know what you're saying, because it does often happen involuntarily. And I think there is a kind of involuntary process of collective awakening underway. I think it's the natural process of evolution. Evolution moves towards an expansion in consciousness in living beings. And I think that's happening now. I think collectively human beings are expanding their consciousness. And people who undergo spiritual transformations are part of that process. So I think the process will take place. Eventually, it is taking place, and it will take place in spite of what we do to hinder it or help it. But I think we can help it. We can encourage that process, particularly by consciously cultivating spiritual awakening in our own lives. Because every movement we make towards spiritual awakening individually will help us collectively to move towards spiritual awakening.
Now, we are in a time, and perhaps in some places in the world, approaching a time where awakenings are really part and parcel with everyday life, at least to the extent that it is now part of the conversation. Here on Tributaries, I've been talking about a lot of things for a lot of years, but in the broad spectrum of the world, these things, they're mainstream now. Just the fact, you know, that you've written this book, many people from all walks of life are speaking about this now, and that's creating the obvious change. And I don't know, are you still involved with academia at this stage?
I am.
So how have you seen that change in your career?
It has changed, particularly over the last 20 years. 20 years ago, there was a kind of rigid fundamentalist materialism in the air, you know, that everything was caused by genes, and there was a gene for this and a gene for that. Do you remember there was
oh,
a gene
yes.
for shopping, a gene for being gay, a gene for everything? But that kind of thinking doesn't really apply anymore, because people have realized that it's too narrow, it's too simplistic, And I think in general, there's been a shift away from that fundamentalist materialism towards a more open attitude. So at my university, I think the course we teach, which is basically spiritual psychology, the psychology of spiritual experiences and spiritual awakening, and you know, a psychological examination of spiritual traditions, spiritual practices. I don't think we could have got away with it 20 years ago. Because it would have been too radical. And the kind of article, I write articles for mainstream websites. I sometimes a little bit careful. I try not to use too much overt spiritual language. But I don't get much resistance. You know, there's a lot of openness, you know, even amongst people who you wouldn't expect to be open to spiritual or esoteric ideas. There's definitely an increasing openness, which is great.
Yeah, and working as you do, you're kind of straddling a couple of worlds here. The psychological is in the scientific realm or the material world at the very least. And everyone is talking from many avenues about bridging the gap between science and spirituality. Do you think we're talking apples and oranges? I'm kind of in the apples and oranges world, and I'm just curious what you feel. I think there is going to be a leap. I don't know that the bridge can actually be fully built.
I think there's always been, well, not always, certainly over the past 100 years, there's been a schism between science and spirituality. In fact, a lot of the original scientists were very religious or spiritual people.
Like yes, yes.
Isaac Newton is a good example. But certainly over the past 100 years, probably since Darwin's theory of evolution, there's been a shift and religion and spirituality have been opposed. Sorry, religion and science have been opposed. But I think it's changing as well. I actually wrote a book in 2018 called Spiritual Science, which tried to bridge that gap. And my argument in the book is that as science has progressed, we found that a lot of things that we expected to explain are not explainable in terms of normal scientific assumptions. Like consciousness, for example, is not explainable.
Right.
In terms of the idea that consciousness is produced by the brain. The effect of the mind on the body is not explainable, like the placebo effect and the way that the mind can create illnesses or heal illnesses. That's not explainable. Even altruism is not explainable. Even evolution, you know, as more evidence is found about evolution, it's not explainable in standard right. Darwinist terms. So all of these kind of holes are opening up. And I think the only way of filling these explanatory holes is to bring in spirituality. So in my book, I suggest the idea that the fundamental reality of the universe is spirit or consciousness. And that if you suggest that idea, then a lot of things become much clearer. You know, you can begin to explain consciousness or the effect of the mind on the body, even evolution. So I think if you adopt, you can adopt a more spiritual interpretation of science, and it actually works a lot better.
Stephen, in your research and in your life, is there one experience with either your contact with someone else or just one of your own personal experiences that really stopped you in your tracks and made you really go, oh, yes, oh, yes?
Yeah, there was an experience that happened when I was about 26 years old. I was interested in spirituality when I was younger, but I became a musician, a rock musician, playing in a band, and I became divorced from my spirituality. I got involved in the kind of, you know, the typical hedonistic musician's life, you know, drinking a lot and staying up late and so on. So I sort of, you know, I was feeling quite frustrated. Even though I thought I was having a good time, I was feeling quite depressed and frustrated. And one morning, I went to bed probably about 3 o'clock in the morning after a few drinks, as usual. And I woke up a couple of hours later in the middle of the night in, you know, the pitch black darkness. And everything was completely different. I felt completely connected to the whole universe. I felt as though I was kind of out of my body, but also inside my body. And I felt as though I was everywhere at the same time. And I had this feeling that the universe is filled with a fundamental harmony, and that everything was okay. There were no problems. Everything was perfect. I felt as though I was riding on the waves of this ocean of harmony, and I knew that it was the fundamental reality of things, and there was nothing to worry about. Everything was just perfect. And it was just like this tremendous feeling of reassurance and relief, a kind of revelation about ultimate reality. And also it was a kind of, it was calling me back to my spiritual nature, which I'd become divorced from. So after that, I began to make some changes in my life, and it was kind of like the beginning of a new phase in my life.
Is that when you found Russell Williams?
Not right then. It was probably about 2 or 3 years afterwards that I found Russell Williams.
Is there anything you'd like to share in closing that perhaps was in Extraordinary Awakenings, or something you'd like to bring out from that I haven't covered?
One of the things I've realized through investigating these cases, and it's quite reassuring for me to know this too, is that human beings are much, much more resilient than we give ourselves credit for. Now, when we live on the surface of life, when everything's going fine and we're not really being tested, we can underestimate ourselves. We can get the feeling that we're not very strong, or we're not very confident or competent. But when we're tested, when life gets really hard and we're tested in extreme ways, we find these amazing reserves of resilience inside us. We're capable of rising to any occasion. And it's not just the resilience, it's also this incredible well-being, this spiritual essence which arises in times of crisis. So there's no reason to be afraid. You know, if you are tested by life, you will find these reserves of resilience inside you. Even the most painful experiences can be transformational. They can put you in contact with this spiritual essence, which will help you, which will support you, and which will remain after the experiences have passed.
Right. There are so many people who look at their cancer as the most surprising gift in their lives because of the transformations that they were able to have.
It's almost as if we have to go through these kinds of experiences to really live, to wake up. In a way, these people who are lucky, the people who've been through cancer, the people who've been through severe depression or severe addiction and come through, they're the lucky ones because they are living life to the full. You know, they're living their second life, and they're really appreciating life. They're really living in a fulfilled and spiritually awakened way.
Extraordinary Awakenings is Steve Taylor's book. For anything Tributaries related, it's tributariesradio.wordpress.com. Our podcasts are on the usual podcast platforms. I'm Robin Clare. Thanks for staying tuned.